Morning, everybody. So today, it's the subject, as you have already heard, is joy, which I think is a really good subject to be have the honour of talking about, really. And I'm fortunate in my workplace that I actually get a lot of joy in what's going on, because I get to see doggies, and dogs do joy very, very well. They're very expert at showing joy. So every day I get to see happy dogs. See, it makes you feel happy already. just seeing that. That's a good start. Now, to be honest, not every dog that we see is happy to see us. Sometimes we get a little bit of this, which is a little bit unsettling at times. Or even this one. Here's a bit of trivia for you. You see this? That's called a whale eye. when you see the whites of a dog's eyes, we call it a whale eye, and it means you're about to be in big trouble because things are about to go horribly wrong. Not everybody's happy to see us, but you know, let's stick to the ones that are. And because I'm an equal opportunity veterinarian, cats feel joy too, and cats bring joy as well. So I guess the overall idea of today is that joy is valuable and joy is important. So basically what I'm going to do today, I'm going to look at one biblical passage and see what we can learn from it. Then I'm going to go off on a wild tangent, and then we're going to sing a song at the end. So I'm going to be reading from Acts chapter 5. When I say reading, I'm going to be paraphrasing from Acts chapter 5, and then we'll get to the key verses that I actually want to talk about today. So you're welcome to follow on my paraphrase. See, I'm not going too wildly off beam. So Acts chapter 5, kind of picking it up, about verse 12. So basically what's happening, let me set the scene for you for what we're dealing with here. So this is the very early days of the Christian church, where we're in Jerusalem, and the apostles are spending basically every day in the outer parts of the temple talking to people about Jesus. So the Christian church is starting to gather momentum. People are coming, and people are getting healed, and people's lives are being changed by the influence of Jesus. So that's great, except that what's also going on at the same time is that the high priest, whose turf they're on, he's not really happy about this, because he is, after all, the one who's really orchestrated the death of Jesus, and he can't let this alone. So, because he's unhappy about that, he arrests the apostles and he throws them into jail, and that doesn't work particularly well, because that very night they're miraculously released from jail and they go straight back to the temple courts and start talking about Jesus again. So the next day, so that obviously infuriates the high priest, and so they get arrested again, and they get brought up before the high priest, who basically says to them, you've got to stop doing this. You've got to stop talking about Jesus, because you're making me look bad, is basically what he says, which is kind of hilarious. But they're seriously thinking of trying to put the apostles to death for what they're doing, because they're creating such a commotion about Jesus, which in turn is a negative thing for them. But at that point, a guy called Gamaliel speaks up and says to everybody who's there, he says, look, either this is something that's from God and you're not going to be able to stop it, or, like all the other revolts and movements that have started up in recent times, once the leader's gone, things just kind of dissipate and go away. So you're better off just to let things go and see how it plays out. And so now we get to the verse that I actually want to talk about, which is blank. No, it's not. I normally would have that up on my screen at the back. Is there any way to get that up on the back so I can read from there? It doesn't really matter, because I can just turn around and read it. Oh, I actually got it here. Look at that. I prepared ahead. So he, Gamaliel, his speech persuaded them. They called the apostles in and had them flogged. Then they ordered them not to speak in the name of Jesus and let them go. The apostles left the Sanhedrin rejoicing because they had been counted worthy of suffering disgrace for the name. And so they went out and they just kept right on doing what they were doing in direct contravention of what they'd been told by the high priests. Now, in those verses, do you notice a paradox there? A paradoxical element there. And that is that they were flogged and they left rejoicing. That's a bit of a paradox, really. Because I don't know that it needs to be said, but flogging was not a fun experience. It's not just a slap on the wrist. It was a severe beating of up to 39 lashes, which very likely meant open wounds on the back and a significant amount of pain. I mean, the pain is kind of the objective of the exercise, really. It's meant to discourage you from ever doing the crime ever again. And I can point out that this didn't have the desired effect on the apostles. The flogging and subsequent pain seems to have no impact on them at all. In fact, they seem pretty happy about it, which sounds counterintuitive, a little bit nutty, but medical research has actually started looking at the way that happiness actually reduces the perception of pain. Admittedly, the studies in this are of people dealing with chronic pain, like arthritis, and happiness does not eliminate the perception of pain, but it does have an effect on how much pain is felt, which we kind of see here. And that leads me to the first thing that I wanted to say about joy, which is scientists actually started looking at the medical benefits of joy, the health benefits of joy. And one summary that I found said, scientific evidence suggests that being happy may have major benefits for your health. For starters, being happy promotes a healthy lifestyle. It may also help combat stress, boost your immune system, protect your heart, and, which is what we're talking about with the apostles, reduce pain. And what's more, it's likely to increase your life expectancy. So joy is good for you, which, I mean, that's kind of obvious because it makes you feel good if you're joyous. But there's actually a mind-body connection there that science doesn't really understand all that well as yet. But you can see the effect, but not really know how it's happening. And people are only just starting to really study this at the moment. So joy is valuable to us. Not only does it make us feel good, but it can actually make us more healthy. Healthy and happy. Okay, so I'm sort of stating the obvious there, that joy is good for you. But the bigger question there is, well, how do we generate joy? That's the more pertinent question of what we're here for today, because we could all use a little bit more joy in our lives. And again, the passage gives us useful information. So just going back to this bit, the apostles left the Sanhedrin rejoicing because they'd been counted worthy of suffering disgrace for the name. So it says they rejoiced. They experienced joy. But why? Well, because they'd been counted worthy of suffering disgrace for the name. And here we see a link between gratitude and joy. They were thankful for what they had gone through. And again, this is an area that has been studied a lot in recent years, how expressing gratitude has a positive effect on how we feel. And it's only really been studied in recent times, but it's kind of ancient wisdom, really. It actually affects the way your brain wiring works, so that the more gratitude you have, the more likely you are to feel positive about life. Now, about a week and a half ago, Mandy and I were in Queensland for a veterinary conference, which was really good, because we hadn't been able to do that for years because of COVID. But one of the conference sessions was nothing about veterinary science at all. It was a plenary session where they got a speaker in to talk about their life and the lessons that they learned in their life. And the guy that spoke to us was a guy called Mark Matthews, which is a good biblical name, you'll agree. And this is what he does for a living, or what he did for a living. He was a big wave surfer, and that's a little wave compared to what he would normally surf. He'd go out in the big stuff. And a lot of the talk was about overcoming fear, because seriously, if you're going to be a big wave surfer, there's a lot of fear that you have to cope with. And his training regime, I won't go into it today, but it was ridiculous what he has to do to kind of get used to the fear that's involved with big wave surfing. Anyway, he talked about fear for a while, but then he talked about this turning point in his life where he was riding one of these big waves, and the big wave didn't work out so well, and he got absolutely pulverised by this thing and landed on a coral reef and smashed his leg. And it was basically the end of his surfing career. And he woke up in hospital sometime later, and the surgeon said to him, well, good news, we've been able to save your leg. And he's going, oh, really? So it's like that bad. All the nerves were damaged in his leg, so he had no control over his foot. And there were all these massive wounds to his leg. And it was getting infected, and they couldn't keep the infection under control. So it was actually looking pretty likely that they weren't going to be able to save the lower part of his leg, which is, you know, pretty terrible news for him. So he kind of relayed this experience of lying in the hospital bed, just feeling completely ruined, because his whole life has basically changed at that point. And I found this account of what then happened. So he was in a hospital, and there was another guy in the same hospital who had actually heard of him, because being a big wave surfer, they have a little bit of a celebrity profile if you're actually interested in that sport. And there was a guy in the same hospital who knew about Mark Matthews, and who happened to be in hospital because of a snowboarding accident where he had broken his neck. So he was in a really bad way. He only had a tiny bit of movement of his arms, no movement of his legs. Anyway, so this guy, whose name was Jason, he was in the hospital, and he somehow sent a message to Mark, oh, can I come up and meet you? I'd really like to meet you because I've been a fan of your work for a long period of time. And Mark had no interest in this whatsoever because he was so depressed and miserable about what was going on. Anyway, this is his account of what then happened. A few hours later, Jason was wheeled into my room and everything changed. Just 3 months before my injury, Jason had finished school, went snowboarding, slipped on the ice and broke his neck. Complete quadriplegic. He held out his hand as best as he could to shake mine. This young kid dealing with his situation with a smile on his face, with so much courage. It completely shifted my mindset. I went from being so full of dark self-pity to being overcome with gratitude, feeling like the luckiest person alive. And then from there, to the absolute surprise of the doctors, the infections in my leg started to heal. The physical turnaround was so unexpected, it prompted me to look up the science of gratitude. And the links between physical health and gratitude were pretty clear. So I made it my main goal, no matter how painful or bad things got through my recovery, to feel gratitude as many times as I could each day. So he was kind of a living example of the power of gratitude on changing how you feel about life. And in that session that we were sitting in while we were listening to this, he then got us to do an exercise. And I'm going to completely steal that exercise, and we're going to do it here today. Because you've probably heard about people doing gratitude journals where you write down a few things every day that you're really grateful for. And he introduced the idea of the gratitude text, which, and how this works is you grab your mobile phone, and I know not everybody will do this, but that's okay. You grab your phone and you think of somebody in your life that you would like to send a gratitude text to, somebody that you would like to thank for what they have done for you in your life. So we're going to take a few minutes to do this, because by doing this, what you are doing is sending a little bit of joy out into the world. And sometimes when you do that, people will reply with a message back to you that will increase your joy as well. So we're going to spend about 90 seconds on this. And if you didn't want to do it, here's even some suggested wording for you. Hi, person that you know. I'm at church listening to this vet talking about the power of gratitude, and it made me think of how glad I am to have you in my life. Thanks for blah, 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 blah. Being a good friend, being there, helping me at that time. So I'm giving you the head start there. And if you still don't want to do it, I've got cat photos that are going to come up every few seconds that's going to make you feel happy just to be here. So if you want to do it, pull out your phone. Think of somebody that you would like to send a little bit of gratitude to and see what happens. Now, I'm not going to completely steal his idea, because what he also did was say that if you got a message back, take a screenshot, email it to him, and you could possibly win a $500 prize. So that's not happening. We're not doing that. For all the conference that he did for the whole year, the end of the year is going to be one winner who won a trip to Hawaii. So we didn't win that, but never mind. So take a little bit of time. Let's show the next cat image for people who aren't doing it. This is the question, the eternal question, are cats solid or liquids? And the last one will answer the question. We'll get to that in just a moment. All right, send that out there into the world. All right, ask cat solid or liquid? Liquid. All right, how are we all going? Oh, finished texting, very good. Okay, we can just finish up while I go on to the next point of order. All right, so what else can we see in this passage from Acts chapter 5 that helps us understand the idea of joy? The key word in this part is they. This was a shared experience. I can't help wondering that if this had been done by just one, if this had happened to just one apostle brought in, told off, flogged, and sent on his way, I wonder if there would have been as much joy. But they were in it together. It was a shared experience. It bound them together even more than they may already have been. And I think that may have been a factor in finding the gratitude for the experience. Because as they got booted out, post-flogging, bruised and battered, it would have only taken one of them to say words to the effect of, "Hey, fellas, you know they flogged Jesus too," to trigger that change in mood from pain to joy in the whole group of them. Because relationships matter. And again, relationships are shown in modern research to be a major impact on happiness. This is an article from the Harvard Gazette with the heading of "Good genes are nice, but joy is better." So the Harvard study is like an 80-year long longitudinal study of following people all through their lives to see just a multitude of factors in what leads to a long, happy, healthy life. And you can tell that this is a serious study because there's a photo of a person with a microscope. So, you know, that's a giveaway of how serious this study is. So I'm not going to read out the whole article, but the key element from it was this. This is a good summary of it. Close relationships, more than money or fame, are what keep people happy throughout their lives, the study revealed. Those ties protect people from life's discontents, help to delay mental and physical decline, and are better predictors of long and happy lives than social class, IQ, or even genes. That finding proved true across the board with whatever socioeconomic group people ended up with. So for sustained, deeper level of happiness, you've got to look after those close relationships in your life. You've got to give people time, you've got to give people help, you've got to listen to people, and that's probably enough. That's being a good friend. And over the span of a lifetime, that can, scientifically proven, raise your level of happiness. And of course, the other thing that these guys showed is that the other showed about joy is that when you're engaged in something meaningful, something bigger than yourself, again, that raises your happiness level. And we very much see this in these guys. They feel like now that they've copped a beating, they're connected to something that is really important. They're more connected to Jesus because he suffered opposition and physical punishment. And research also backs this idea. People who feel that they are part of something bigger than themselves, doing something meaningful, tend to be happier. And the studies that show this are the Blue Zone studies, which are studies of little pockets of people, groups of people around the world, like the Loma Linda Adventists. They're one of the Blue Zone people. They live long, happy lives. And part of that's, you know, healthy eating and no alcohol and no smoking, that kind of thing. But relationships is very important, but also being part of a community that's attached to something meaningful, like the church, is also very, very good and important. So let me get to a little bit of a semi-summary. So there's a variety of components we can see just from these two verses alone about joy. Joy boosters are things like daily showing of gratitude, maintaining and looking after your close relationships, and being involved with something that is meaningful. So that's a variety. I haven't even touched on exercise or being in nature or music or any of those kind of things. But all these things contribute to higher levels of joy that are protective against the trials and difficulties that inevitably come our way. But that's kind of enough of me talking about joy. I want to give us the chance to see and maybe even feel some joy at this point. So we're going to show a video. I'm going to give you fair warning. It is a sports story. But like all the really good sports stories, it's really a human story. It's happened 16 years ago in a high school in America. Some of you would have seen this before, maybe 16 years ago. And just by way of explanation, one small detail in the story. This is about basketball. The role of team manager in a high school team, it's more of a supportive role, like mopping the floors and handing out the waters and tidying up afterwards. It's not like the coach. The coach is the one who leads and directs the team. Anyway, if we could fire that up. This is about another boy called Jason, not the quadriplegic one, a whole different Jason. So it only goes for a couple of minutes. Thank you.
Greece Athena High School in Rochester, New York, has a new, most unlikely hero, a special ed student by the name of Jason McElwain.
Let's keep it going.
Jason is the basketball team manager. For the past couple years, he's been assisting coach Jim Johnson, helping with whatever the team needs.
And go!
Get him motivated and hand out water and just be enthusiastic.
Enthusiastic, to say the least. Despite being born with autism, Jason's father says his son has never had a problem expressing himself at basketball games.
You know, I was always concerned that he might get a technical and they lose a game because he, you know, start yelling or whatever.
Let's have a hard practice tomorrow, all hour and a half, and let's get ready for Arcadia. Okay. Let's go.
One, two, three, two.
Because he has been so devoted to the team, for the last game of the season, Coach Johnson decided to let Jason actually suit up. Not to play necessarily, just to let him feel what it's like to wear a jersey. At least that was the plan. But with 4 minutes to go in last week's game, Coach Johnson stood up and pointed to number 52, Jason McElwain. After years of fetching water and toweling off other people's sweat, Jason was actually in a game. His first shot was a 20-footer from the right baseline.
Was it close? Did you almost make it?
I just airballed it.
I'm like, just, dear God, please, let's just get him a basket.
His second shot missed too, but the third was a charm. A three-point no-doubter. And Jason wasn't done yet. Not by a long shot.
If I wasn't there to witness it, I wouldn't have believed it, you know.
You caught fire.
I just caught fire. I was hot as a pistol.
Jason ended up shooting 6 three-pointers. One right after the other. He had 20 points total, and each time a shot went in, his teammates and the crowd went a little crazier. His last basket, right at the buzzer, created total mayhem. Because he is autistic, Jason says he's used to feeling different. but never this different. Never this wonderful. Steve Hartman, CBS News, Rochester, New York.
Okay, so what's going on there? What were the crowds in the stands, those people who knew Jason, experiencing? Joy. Why? Why were they experiencing joy? It's because someone they knew, someone they loved, someone who had the deck stacked against him, was doing something incredible, something triumphant, something beautiful. And their happiness for him was overflowing, and you saw what joy looks like, jumping around, hands in the air, screaming, shouting. Some of you are feeling that too right now. Okay, well, just hold on to that feeling in your mind for a moment. Now what I want you to do is put yourself in the shoes of one of the friends of Jesus. You're one of the really privileged people on this planet who got to walk with him and talk with him. And every minute you spent with him was excellent. You'd never been with anybody who was so kind, so wise, so interesting, so compassionate, so good. And each of those moments in his presence was precious and enriching. But then, one fateful night, he gets dragged off into the darkness, under arrest. And the next day you see him beaten and battered and nailed to a cross until the life was literally drained out of him, and he's gone. He's gone. Out of your life. Out of your world. And life now is gloomy and dark and awful in his absence. But then, just a few days later, in the misty early morning half-light, there's an unexpected sound. There's a woman running down the road, and she's calling out. She's shouting, "He is risen. He is risen." And you come to realize that he's alive again. Somehow, he's overcome death itself. And he's done something incredible, something triumphant, something beautiful. And you will get to see your friend again, to spend even another fleeting moment in his presence. What would you feel? Joy. But more than that, you realize something else. You realize that months ago, when people were clamoring around Jesus, and the skeptics were asking him for a sign to prove that he was the Son of God, like they're asking him to do some kind of magic trick or something. And he said, "Well, I'm not going to give you a sign. I'm not going to perform for you, but there will be a sign. These people who don't believe in me, they'll kill me. I'll be put to death on a cross. But so that you know that I am the Son of God, I'm telling you now, I won't stay dead. I'll rise again." And now it's happened. He has risen. So not only is your friend back from death, he has demonstrated, he has shown that he is the Son of God. Your friend is the Son of God, back from the dead. What do you feel? Joy. Something you thought might be true about your friend, but now you know it to be so. Joy. But more than that, for us now, when we look at the death and the resurrection of Jesus, we see even more than that. Because we know he didn't just do that to prove that he could. He didn't just do it for his own benefit. In Romans 5 and verse 8, "While we are still sinners, Christ died for us. He willingly submitted to death, even death on a cross in our place, for us. He made us right with God. He took our sin to the cross when he had no sin. And he bestowed his right standing with God onto us when we have no right to claim it. He took our punishment. He gave us his reward. And when we see him raised up again from the dead, we know this to be true. When we see that, when we see what has been done for us by him. What do we feel? Joy. But finally, when we look at the death and resurrection of Jesus, what that confers on us, what is gifted to us through his suffering and triumph, and we ask, why? Why would he do that? Why would the Son of God put himself through that for us? Who are we? Why would he do that? We don't have to look hard for the answer. For God so loved the world that he gave his only Son. Why would he do it? Because we are loved. Despite our unloveliness, our hardness of heart, our rebelliousness, our pride, God loves us. And he showed it in the death and the resurrection of Jesus. When we look at that, when we hold it up to the light and see how deeply God loves us, what do we feel? Joy. Life can be challenging, brutal, disappointing, painful, overwhelming. But joy can be found, if nowhere else, but in looking to what Jesus did in dying and rising from the dead. It was triumphant, it was incredible, it's beautiful, and it's for us.